The great thing about Atlas Butler is they do it all. Heating, cooling, plumbing. Look, I'm busy with work. I don't have time to wait around or deal with lots of people. One company, one call, and they do it all. Wonder if they'll clean out my inbox. Seriously, offer that service. Please.
Atlas Butler is at your service. Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Do you want a water or anything, Dermot? Oh, you're all right?
Yeah, it's just a squeaky voice.
Yeah. Shouting at people for years.
Shout for 40 years. Yeah.
40 years of shouting.
Something hard to give.
This is the 1895 Podcast, official podcast of Shelburne FC, bringing you news, views and interviews from inside Talca Park, Dublin's finest since 1895. Here's your host, Darren Cleary.
You're very welcome to the 1895 Podcast, the official podcast of Shelburne Football Club. It is Darren Cleary here with you. For the next little while, Stephen Doody is on holidays showcasing his collection of exotic shirts. He's in Lanzarote, so we've got someone over from Lanzarote to join us. Gone the other direction, Dermot Keely.
Pleasure to be here.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
How's life out in Lanzarote?
Warm. It's cold here, I tell you, yeah. No, lovely. It's a lovely island. Great move for us. We really love it. Really love it.
You've been busy out there. You've been writing a book. Tell us a bit about that.
It's taken longer than the Bible. I know that. I think it was about my son came to me, Alan, who subsequently passed away. He came to me and said, "You know, Dad, you should write." We were out of home. We were having a pint, and he said, "You should write a book." And I said, "Like, why would I write a book? First of all, who'd read it? And secondly, they Google everything." I said, "You still, the whole world's changed." And he said, "Yeah, the grandkids." And I said, "What about them? You'll tell them." And he said, "No, they'd love to know." And that's when I started. And just got in then. And then, unfortunately, Alan died. And that kind of put a halt to it. And then my wife kept annoying me, really. Just more than annoying me and bullied me. First person, I think, ever to bully me. Bullied me into going back to it. And we wrote it. And Neil O'Riordan then kindly put it into English. So the ordinary person in the street could read it. And it's out now. So
a lovely tribute to Alan. And obviously the role he played in getting it written. He's very, very fondly remembered and dearly missed by a lot of people at Shells. He would be known for obviously coming into the club at a time where no one wanted to be near us, same as yourself.
Yeah, it was horrendous time really for the club. And you look at it. Dundalk now, it's very easy to see the club could have gone under, obviously. It's the only way you would have got to play with Shells anyway, because there's no players. So I was calling in all favours, I think, when I went down. But it was the same for me, I think. I just, it's such a magnificent club that at the time I was lucky I was young enough to be able to go back into it and help out any way I could. It was fantastic.
We'll get to the second spell in a moment, but we probably start at, you know, that transition. You know, you had such a decorated playing career. You'd probably achieved everything you might have wanted as a player. Was management always part of the plan? Did you feel like you just couldn't leave the game? Was it always there for you?
I don't, my head doesn't work that way. I mean, lots of people say my head doesn't work, but I never think about it. I never thought about football. I just do it. And winning was the thing. And then, you know, you win and win. You win so often. Then it just fell in. It just fell into it. All of a sudden, I was down in Sligo managing. And then I just got into it. It just seemed a normal progression from A to B. It didn't. There was no great talk. You'll find there's no great talkers in anything I do, really. A lot of it is just, I go with my belly. And if it works, it works. And if it doesn't work, and thank God, most times, it was successful. Well, it was more successful than unsuccessful.
Yeah, do you look at kind of the modern football where everything is driven down to a T. It's all data, it's all computer, and think maybe there's not enough people working off their gut.
It's shocking. It's like having no money. You don't pay with money anymore. You have to get a card. I can't do it. I lose the card all the time. So, like, it's a disaster. I can't. And it's nothing to do with modern football. Well, it is obviously something to do with modern football. I find it very hard to watch. Like, we've League of Ireland TV, we've all everything, Sky, all that, but I kind of watch it for 20 minutes and fine. I can't understand two centre-halves getting the ball off the goalkeeper in 6 yard box out and expected to play the ball in, out to the edge of the box and back again and back forward and back again. I think it's... I presume it's called progress, but it misses something for me. If I, you know, people said to me, you should go back to Dundalk. Yeah, well, I go back to Dundalk, I get 2 6-foot-4 centre forwards and bashing the ball up to them. So, you know, it's changed, I know. But it, and people diving and stuff. It's, you know, what used to be for us, and that's, I'm showing my age now, like, you would be afraid to go down when you got kicked because you wouldn't want anybody to know that you got kicked. Whereas now they go down like the merest shove. And that's the way the world is, or the game is. But it's, I just don't think it's enjoyable as it was.
Where did the big break come in management coaching? Was it Dundalk or Sligo?
Oh, no, Sligo started and they were in the... They started in the... Sorry, I took them over. They were relegated. And we finished fourth that year when we got back up. And then always, as usual, in my third year, things always go astray. Either I get bored and lose my concentration or more than likely people just get fed up listening to me shouting and roaring and throwing cups in dressing rooms and doing all the stuff that you shouldn't do. So I think I have a 3 year span. I'm no Alex Ferguson. I'm not going to build you a house. I might put the foundations in, but I'm not building the house.
But the 3 years at Shells, I suppose the most successful 3 years we've had as a club. How did the opportunity come about to take over at Talca?
Ollie rang me. God rest him. One lunatic to another.
Did you know him well at that point? Had you many
dealings? No, I just knew of him. I dealings with him. Sure, everybody had dealings with Ollie. And I was always in the wrong because it was, if you were dealing with Ollie, you were dealing against Shells and it didn't make any difference what it was, whether you were right or wrong. Shells won. It wasn't in his mind to think anything else. So if you couldn't do it for Shells, you weren't doing it. So if you got into any other position where, you know, maybe it was going to interfere with Shells in any way, that was him, gone. So he rang me and I just went for didn't even go for, I don't go for interviews. I've never applied for a job. So we just got it and he just came down and told me blah, 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 blah. And we just, I said, grand. Again, I don't think about it. When I got in, I saw the quality of players, like, you know, I thought I died and went to heaven. Like, it was a fantastic team.
Who were the ones that really took the breath away?
Oh, they were a good side. Like Stephen Gagan up front. I can't control all the players there. They just as a team, they were fantastic. Like, you know, they were soft. Like Damien had, they had a fantastic team. Pat Fenlon, I mean, just, you know, a really good captain went down to manage as well. All good players. They were really, really, really good players. But they had a kind of a softness about them that they were never going to win the league. I didn't think, because they loved cups. They were fantastic.
They were a cup team in the 90s.
Cup team, yeah. Like Damien must have loved cups. I hate the cup. I mean, I only respect the cup if there's a league to go along with it. I like doubles. I don't, but winning a cup to me is not... I won a cup in 1975 with Home Farm and we bet Shells in the final. Home Farm were amateurs and we won it. And we bet, I think Shells were tore from the bottom of the honour. So the worst team in the league against the third worst team in the league got to the final of a cup. So it kind of demeans the cup for me a little bit. Took the gloss of the cup wins away from me.
Well, if you look what'll happen this year, it'll probably be a Wexford or a Drogheda in a final, and that's just the way it goes. Like, yeah. One of the best teams in the country, if they play the wrong team on the wrong day.
Yeah, it's just it's luck, real luck. I mean, if it, home fan getting to a cup final, I mean, impossible. And it'll never happen again, ever. I'm convinced. Well, you should never say never, but I really don't think it's possible. And then this year, it's bound to be. It's bound to be an unusual final. But, so there's no, I don't know. There's an awful lot of luck to it. As you say, getting the team, you could get the best team on the wrong day for them, and you're through. You know, anything. I think it's just a lot of luck in it. Whereas you win the league, it's yours. You've won it.
You're the best team.
You're the best team, without a doubt.
When you come into that Shell's dressing room, is it the start before the start of 98?
Mm.
Yeah, you come into that dressing room, you look at, I suppose, the senior players, the Gago, absolutely brilliant. You look at the young players coming through, the likes of an Owen Heary, a Richie Baker, and you think there's enough quality here, but there's a softness there. Do you tell them out straight, like, you're good enough, you're just not hard enough?
No, I don't tell them they're good enough. Gee, no. I don't think I complimented anybody ever. I don't. No, my management was like hands around the neck, not hands around the shoulder. Like, you know. No, I wasn't a Mr. Nice Guy. No, I was frustrated. I would look at them and be frustrated with them. And it took me a year. But the second year when we got some players in, they're like Zahiri and real good players. Well, he was, again, exception. Richie Baker coming on. And Desi, who became the player, like, from thinking, telling everybody he was with Manchester United for a trial, to come back and knuckle down and play and get player of the year. That was huge. Like he was walking around, like, smelling himself. And that changed second year. And I think he copped on. He was great. And Richie came into the team as well. They were fantastic. Like, we call them, as you know, the Fabulous Baker Boys.
Yeah.
You know? They were like, but they have to buy into it eventually. You can't come. When I went there first, they had their ways. So then you get a while, and then we trained really, really hard too. I was a hard taskmaster. They'd done a lot of, you would do a lot of work without a ball, I tell you. Did a lot of running. You have to be fit, so that, you know, no point in having ability if you can't play till the end of the game, to the end of 90 minutes. But they were a pleasure again afterwards. You know, when they got used to me and I got used to them, I would have been a long way off Damien in manner and the way I spoke to people, and probably they'd say abuse people, I don't know. But
Damien Richardson always seemed like that calm, collected, very, definitely a hand around the shoulder type manager.
Yeah, I'm the opposite. No, I just, no, throwing cups at them. And, you know, I can see fellas coming in on the Friday night with their hanging up their clothes for going out, and me flinging cups of tea around and looking at their shorts and tea all over it. And, like, you're not going out. And then nobody said that to you, like, because there would have been an upheaval then. There's a volcano got erupted in the dressing room. So when everything walk out, then they get around. And I don't. They're great times. I mean, they're really great times.
As a chairman, what was Ollie like to work with? Was he hands off? Did he get in the way?
Ridiculous. I think it was my first match. I don't know. Anyway, I went in at half time. I don't even remember whether I was fighting or I wasn't going to fight. I was, whether we were good or bad, but I went in and, before the first match, and I goes into the dressing room and I'm walking down and all the lads have their heads down and I can see their shoulders rocking. Ollie's sitting in the middle of the dressing room, sitting down among the players, looking up with his arms folded, like as he's doing his famous stance with the arms folded. And I looked down at him, and you can see the lads kind of putting their hand up to it and rocking with laughter, because they knew, they Ollie didn't, but they knew from just the few weeks we'd had that I wasn't going to have none of it. So I said to him, well, this I can't say it then.
You can, yeah, yeah.
No,
that is no, you're after the watershed here.
Right, well, I walked in and he's smiling at me and I said, what the fuck are you doing here? And he looked like astounded. And he said to me, Damien let me stay in for team talks. And I said, I fucking don't. Get the fuck out of here. Now. And he looked at me and said, but I'm And I got to him and I said, I don't care who you are. I said, get out or I go. You play, you walk or I walking. So, yeah, of course, the players are all looking at this. And Ollie, of course, leaves. And the lads, it's good for me anyway, because I've just taken on the biggest man, the chairman, top man, and won. And then afterwards, he was all sweetness and light, because I think we must have won, obviously. And then all in, it was like he hadn't been there and there wasn't a row. And that was always Ollie. When you had a row with him, you had a row. But see, the next day he'd come in and he'd be all right. Like, you know, he'd be back over it. Like, it was like he could put out in the back of his mind and say, well, it didn't happen. So you're working between outright rage, and then you come in the next day and you're waiting for something and you're ready. You've psyched yourself up for the battle. And he goes, morning, how are you there? How's things? And you're looking and going, Jesus, what's going on? Like, you know.
The battle doesn't come. Talk us through that first year. Ollie's banned from the dressing room. How do you get on in that first season?
We did okay. I think we came third or fourth. I don't know. But it took a long time. Damien had done really, really well there. Like, he'd won cups. The team was really good. And they played a certain way. It's a bit like Derry, you know. They always wanted to play good football. But I was different. I didn't care about playing football. I just wanted to win a league. So it took a long time to get better then, I think, like, for them to accept me. And I'm difficult. I mean, I know that. And I'm, when you think about, I'd be much more like Ollie than Damien.
Yeah.
So, you know, they take a while to get, and I don't think they liked me particularly, you know. And I think there was a bit of unease there. And then when we all got on, you saw, like, when he was after, when he was away and he wasn't working, he was the best. And I think probably I was a bit like that. Like, when it was all over, it was grand. It's over. It's over. It's done. I didn't carry grudges. And I think it was the longest I've ever taken to kind of embed myself in. But then the following year then was ripe for winning it, which we did.
And did you think going into that season that it would go the way that it did? The 1999-2000 season ends with Shells with all the tin. Did you know you'd done enough in that first season that you saw this achievement?
I knew. No, you don't foresee a double, definitely. But no, I knew we climbed a mountain at that stage. Everyone knew what was expected of them. I knew what was expected of me, and we had really good players. I mean, Damien, whatever he didn't leave the club in a mess. He left it really, really well off with really, really good players, and really, it only needed tweaking, I suppose. Well, probably a bit more than that, but not much. The players were there. I mean, I brought in a couple from Home Farm and they didn't last. Owen Heary was the difference. I mean, he came on then, became a hater word legend, but he's become a club legend. So it just seemed to gel. It's the way it is in football. If it didn't go, and I'd already told Ollie if I didn't win the league in 2 years, I'd leave. So while he was happy, he's like, he's on a win-win. The fella doesn't win a league this year, he's gone without any bother. So there wouldn't have been any upheaval, he'd just gone. So yeah, it was great. Like, it was great winning. It was great winning doubles.
How did you manage the older heads in the squad with some of those new players you're trying to bring through? Because obviously there's a foundation of players there probably from the 93 season. I think Mick Neville is probably still around in your first year.
Yeah.
How do you manage marrying that all up? Because you've lads at the end of their journey and lads who are just starting their journey.
I don't. The lads that are at the end of their journey help the lads that are on. If they're good pros, and they were. Declan Gagan, good pro. If you, Tony McCarthy, you know, I won't mention Pat Scully, but they were good pros. And they helped. Pat Fennell came in to me. I signed a couple of the big lads from the Home Farm, and Pat Fennell came in to me one day and just said, I had a row. told me that they weren't good enough. Now I went bananas. Somebody telling me what to do.
That ever happened before?
No.
Coming in and telling you you've made the wrong signing?
No. No, it didn't. And I tell you what, I could have killed Pat Fennell. And I told him to get out and don't be bothering me. And he'd mind his own business and I'd do what I wanted to do. And then, you know, I think even though, even through the haze, when something says something that's right, I have enough sense to realise, yeah, this is right. And if I don't do this, or if I do this, I'm going to win it. I'm close. And he sorted it out. It was the best thing that ever happened to me in Shells. Because Ollie was ranting and raving all the time. But when Pat Fennell came in as captain and said, those players aren't good enough, of course, went bananas because I thought, how dare you? But then when I sat and thought about it, he was right. And when I corrected it, fantastic. You were away.
That's the kind of captain you want in your dressing room, isn't it?
Yeah. It balls. Very few people come in and face me now. And, you know, he was great. And he went on to have a career manager, which he had to have. But that, it takes gumption. And I admire that. You don't have to be kicking people to be hard, man. But to go and have the belief to come in and be able to stand up to me, a bully, like who's got that way, bullying you, that's his way, to be able to sit and go, yeah, he's right. And we never look back. And you say, yeah, you won the double and that. But it was only Pat Fennell came in and said, well, look, here, I'm going to say me piece. And I said, go ahead, but I didn't like it. I didn't like it.
I grew up watching those teams and, you know, there's so many players in your squad at that time that went on to have amazing careers. And I think it's a great shame part of the time. Like nowadays there's LOI TV, there's, you know, Virgin, RTE, there's any amount of ways of seeing games. You can nearly see every game in the Premier, the First Division that's played. But I don't think people really appreciate how good a Declan Gagan was or a Pat Fennell was, because there's not enough footage of them. How good were these players?
They were the best in the league. And they won the league. They won a double with dummies. And I didn't. I really, at the end of it, it was basically the team I had taken over. It wasn't. I don't think there was too many. On Heary, definitely, you know, comes to mind immediately because he came in. And he was one that Pat Fennell annoyed. And on he, as much as me, because I liked him, on he became the player he was because he was trying to prove Pat Fennell that he was capable of coming from home farm and playing. So it walked the whole way through. It was, but that's a senior pro's job. They don't, it's like a lot of people when they come into a club and senior people, they knock them back. But these boys didn't. And real good pros, which they were, took people on board. Even though they were in the team, but taught them how to play the way they wanted to play. And that helps. And I've done it my whole life. I mean, Anto Whelan is a perfect example of it. I took him everywhere with me because he understood me and he ran the team. These people run the team for you. There's no managing. Like Jim McLaughlin, you say that his managing his teams were easy because when I was playing. Because he'd only six fellas to manage. I ran the back four or the back five. So he said he would say he's six teams. So it was easy. And when you come and you're Pat Fennell, Declan Gagan, Anto Whelan, all these people are really, really good pros. You can't miss if you can get them into your way of thinking. But they help. I mean, John Coley would tell you many times he said to him, Brian Bourne was playing, just leave him alone. Damn it, leave him alone. You're killing him. And you need that because and then you need them to come in and put their arm around him and say, look, don't mind him. He's mad. He'll do something. He'll be all right tomorrow. He'll have forgotten all about this. And it's a whole mixture. I loved signing senior pros. Lots of people don't. They sign young fellas. I hated signing young fellas. I love signing older players, because they knew the ropes. You're not trying to teach them. And they teach. They do your teaching for you.
How did you manage the mad ones? Like, I'm sure there was probably young lads at their time coming through where characters, Richie Farn probably jumps to mind.
I don't think I managed Richie. I mean, I don't know.
He was there, but there probably wasn't too much management.
No, he's mad. Like, I mean, just, but one of the Saturdays he came in, he was, had to be no Friday night, he was still pissed. Like, you know, he'd be going around kicking people, I had to send them home. Like, but he was a lovely, mad on the pitch. But lovely, nicest young fella you'll ever meet. And a real good player. And my dad, like, when, can you imagine me hearing him when he's going, he started managing? I said, not a chance, like, managing. Honestly, and then, like, he's gone on, he's well done, he's got a sports shop, he's fantastic, he's done great. But what a rocket, boy. But I loved him. I genuinely loved him.
I'd say you have a good few stories about people like that that are in the book.
Yeah, well, not too many. There's the Lords of Libel.
Yeah, of course.
There's I tried to write it, but I didn't want to give. I wouldn't put if I've insulted somebody or if I've said something that I shouldn't say. Well, that's unfortunate, but it's not that type. It's about managing teams and playing on teams and having a bit of crack, yeah, a bit of bonds. But there's a lot of things. I've always said, you know, what goes on tour stays on tour. Yeah. And some of that you keep. Because I know somebody said to me early on in the book, said, Jesus, you'll kill us. Like, if you say so-and-so, 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 so-and-so. So it's not a boring book, I hope. But it's not full of, you're not going to be able to ring up Nutsy and say, listen, what were you doing that night? Yeah, yeah. Not Nutsy particularly, anybody like, you know. So, no, it's, I hope it's a good read. I do. People have said, no, I haven't gone, well, you don't know. People come up to you and say, oh, it was great, but you don't know.
People love getting the stories from those days and, especially when they experience it from one side of the fence, say the supporter side, the story about Ollie and the dressing room, other stories. People love that kind of thing, you know, getting to peel back the layers, I suppose, and see who the people were behind the players that they fell in love with at this time of their life.
Well, that's true. And they did fall in love with them, but they deserve to be loved. But my attitude all the time was tough love. They didn't get too much from me, now I tell you.
The stands loved them. Tell us about going down the home stretch of that double year. I mean, who were the rivals? Who were you trying to see off? What was the last few weeks of that campaign like?
I can't remember. Back, I just we got into a groove and we were going to win it from way out. I think I don't know at that stage who I don't, because it wouldn't be me. I'm focused totally on the. And our crew.
Yeah.
So I would have thought from early, midway through it, I would have thought.
You weren't worried about anyone else?
No, I thought we could win this. I genuinely, the improvement in the year before, from the year before, was fantastic. I just knew we were there, thereabouts. And then the cup and all came with it. And you know, you need luck. You need a lot of luck.
You did the hard way. Yeah. A replay.
Yeah, but
not an easy way to do it. And especially when you win it for the first time and whatever it was at the time, was it 6 years, 7 years?
But we were shocking first match, the final, because it was nerves. Everybody was nervous. I was nervous. Everybody. But the second game, we were on top of it. Like, you know, we were good. We were the outstanding. It was an outstanding team. We were the most. And now when you win a double, you've won the league and you win the cup, so you're the best. But they really were. And they were the best by a good distance.
What was Europe like back in those days? Like, was it as critical as it is now for clubs? Like, there's so many European places up for grabs every year. Was it different back then?
Yeah, it was. I would have. I probably had a problem with Europe myself in that I never really took it seriously. There wasn't any, this huge money wasn't available. Like, you know, you go in and teams have six matches to go. Like Rovers have six more matches in Europe. You're going to make whatever it comes, 2 million quid on the whole thing. That wasn't with us. I mean, you were playing, normally if you got past the first round and you got into the next round, you met a fairly decent side who were better. And we were part-time, so you were going to get beaten. So I never really, I got this from McLaughlin. McLaughlin wanted to win leagues and cups at home. He never really took on Europe. And I don't think I did either. I think I probably let the teams down, the club down, because I would be looking for the next league match. I wouldn't be bothered in Europe, because I would always think we were going to go out of it. But now it's huge. I mean, winning the league is huge now.
The mad thing is, it was the quest for Ollie's quest for Europe that probably kills the club, drives it to the brink of extinction. Did that play a part in you stepping back? Because you're one of the few managers who ever leaves a club completely on his own terms.
No, this Europe thing, he was just mad. Took up his days and nights. Like, he wasn't good enough then to be win doubles and being the best team in Ireland. Now we wanted to win the European Cup. Like, he honestly believed we could compete, but we couldn't. We're part-time for a start. And the league was designed differently. It wasn't designed to give you a room where it is now, where you can go down from one to the conference all the way down and you get matches all the way and you get money all the way. You had a one-off chance of making money if you drew with Manchester United or whoever was, won the league, Liverpool. That was your only way of making money. So I had much time for it, really. It wasn't my bag. I was all, maybe I'm insular. I just wanted to win league matches. I wanted to win leagues here. I never thought, because you never could compete. Teams were better than you. That was it. So you think you're going out to Denmark and you're saying, well, we'll beat these. Are we Hungary? You're going to beat them. They're not going around. They're taking the piss out of you.
Yeah.
They're a different class. And they were a different class. So I was in the old school there where you just went and Europe was your holiday. That was your part of your bonus for winning the league, was going to Malta or somewhere else like that. And you go, great, get a week of Malta. That's the way. I must say everybody thought like that, but I think very much so. Whereas now, there's a difference. You go into Europe and you have a real chance to do what Rovers are doing this year. Like that's an awful lot of money. That should keep them at the top of Irish football for so long, like for many, many years, if it's done right and not squandered like
Dundalk.
If you manage that money well now, you're there. You know, you can buy the better players, you can improve all your facilities. You know, and you're also buying players that now Shells can't buy because you've won, you know, you've got all that much money and these other teams can't compete with you. So it's a lesson then, you go and you win the following year.
You said earlier in the interview, Dermot, that you liked signing established pros. You weren't mad on too many young lads. When I think of a young lad that was brought into the club when you were there, and it probably epitomises your point, what would you say if I said the name Brad Jones to you?
I wouldn't even know who he is.
He was your goalkeeper.
Your goalkeeper. Yeah, useless.
He came in. You're 3-0 up, and I think he conceded 4.
Yeah, that's it, me. Boy, baby. Honestly, you said Brad Jones, I know the name. I have a Joe Biden moment, I think. I remember that now. But like,
came in on loan, played that game against Bolton.
And good luck.
I don't think you ever played.
No, we didn't. Why would you? No, I tell you what, when I made up my mind, There's no problems with it either. And I'd do that with anybody. I'm seriously ruthless. I didn't care. Not for me, for the team. So you come in and let the team down, you're gone, forget about it. I mean, I came in here first, I had to let Tony Shedden go because super player. Wouldn't run up and down the way I wanted them to. Like, didn't want to play that way. He was a different type of player. And adored by Shells fans still to this day, and rightly so. But it, in my head, he didn't fit. So he went.
There was a Damien Duff did an interview a while ago where he was talked about the people who he's let go. I think it was with Richie Sadler, and he made the point that, like, you let 40 or 50 people go, but you have to take it as it's them or me. You know, if I keep people around here who aren't able to do the job, who aren't able to, you know, carry the can or do what I want from them, I'll be the one that's out of a job. Is that the approach you had at the time?
All the time. And it wasn't that. It's just that's the way. What, like, you're there to win a league. And if you don't win it, you get sacked when you lose matches. So you want fellas hanging around. If they weren't good enough, they weren't good enough. That was good luck to them. I have no problem with that. And if you have a problem with that, you shouldn't be a manager. If you want to be loved by people, by players, you can forget about it. It's a tough job.
I made a mistake. We were 4-0 up and we lost 6-4 to Bowes. I think Brad Jones has fouled for six of them.
Ah, no. I remember the thing, but I mean, I would erase that from my memory because I've screwed up somewhere along the line, and that didn't happen now.
You've forgotten them?
No, it's not in. It didn't happen. I erased it. It's like a computer now. I just erased it. So you say Brad Jones, I said who? Because I've erased his mind. Now, I probably threw a dig at him in the dressing room, probably, but right, no, I didn't. I must have just said, pack your bags and go.
Off you go. So you get to the end of that year, you have everything. You've got your double, you've brought this group to a place where, you know, 2 years ago, I don't think anyone thought they were going to get there under Damien Richardson. They were seen as, they had ability, but they were never going to be the finished product. You brought them to the finished product. What do you do then? Where do you go from there?
You try and stay there. But then you see, now it's your mentality. And as I kept saying, I don't think I can do it for more than that 3 years. I think the players, I demand so much of players and the demand and of myself that in the end you hit the wall. You're just not capable of doing it, you know. And then it's a bit repetitious. They've heard the same thing now for 2 years. The same, you know, same ratting and raving, same things when you lose or when you win, and it's very difficult. It's very difficult to freshen up a team that's just won a double. So you go, well, players. So then you go, say, well, we'll carry this into the next year, and it just doesn't work. I don't know why. Probably me. I say just something in my makeup. I haven't got. I really don't know. I don't know why I can't get past 3 or 4 years. 3 years, I think, most places. It's just stopped.
So you took a time out then, probably midway through the next season after that. Was that just, you probably had the feeling that you were nearing the end?
That, and Dad died. He had dementia. And that, coupled with Ollie, you know, I mean, constantly. This was the most high-pressured job you can take. And I loved Ollie. And I wouldn't say a bad word about him. But he was hard work. He if you didn't win or you drew, there was an autopsy straight away. Like, it's, everything came out. Like, and what are you doing? And that's something like, you know, it was really, 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 really mentally hard. And then I had that going on as well with my dad. So my brain just said, good luck. I'm not having any more of this. And I just stepped away. Noel King came in. And I stepped away for a couple of months and came back at the end of it.
Yeah, there's a good quiz question in there. I think Noel is the only man to ever manage a senior women's and men's of the same club. Because obviously he came in and had a stint as caretaker and then managed the Shells women's for a few years.
So. Yeah. Well, yeah. I was never going to manage the Shells women's. That's never going to happen anyway. I'm of another era.
You came back, but by the end of that year, or towards the end of that year, you'd made your own decision that you'd hit the end of the road. Was it that kind of third album syndrome, let's call it, third season syndrome?
Yeah. And No, I knew too. I mean, that was huge pressure. That you don't really realize that at the time. But yeah, but nobody thinks you have a life outside as well. So things hadn't gone well there, and your father being, devastated by Alzheimer's or dementia, whatever they call it. It's really, really, really hard when you're going into a room, your father doesn't know you. And you were his pride and joy, you know, you went to school, you went to university, you played football in the League of Ireland, and then this man doesn't know you. You walk into a room and is crying because you're going to put him in a home, like, because you can't manage him. We couldn't manage him. It's awful. And you don't think about it, but it obviously just gets on top of you. And it could have been not only shells and the pressure here, but the accumulation of pressure that I would have put on myself, where I said, join the Shells, well, I'll win the league in 2 years. I mean, what a dope. I mean, who?
Dude, they hadn't won the league since 93.
Yeah, I'm supposed to be an intelligent man, school teacher. They go, well, you have brains. Yeah, what's some brains? Ollie, I'll win the league in 2 years. Wait, before I even see a team, like, I'm, oh, yeah. I'm, like, that's how, that's madness. And I think then when it all comes and you're in your head and saying, well, I said I'd win it, and I will. But, you know, you don't think you're going, and then all that stuff just heaps back on top of you. And my head said, look, stop, give me a rest. And I walked.
And it was only ever getting worse at Shells because Ollie was pushing for full-time football. He wanted to go to Europe. And I don't know, you're probably looking at it and maybe you're thinking, Jesus, this is heavy whack. You'll either achieve everything that you've ever wanted or you'll run the train off the rails.
Yeah, but I'm a school teacher. So they go full time. I've got to take, I'm lucky because I could take a year off. But I hated full time. I'm not geared for full time football. I'm geared for Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday, or whatever it was. You know, Sunday after a Friday game, Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday, Monday, Wednesday would have been. And getting that was enough for me. I didn't like football enough. I was bored. I come in here in the morning, you've got coaches, they're all out training around the team, you're sitting around like your hands folded. What am I doing?
You're done at 11 a.m. every morning.
Yeah, I did. But I was, because I wasn't a coach. Yeah. I never understood that coaching and columns and stuff. I was a manager. So you're not a man. There's no managers anymore, they're all head coaches. I don't know, head vans, whatever you call them, but they're not. I couldn't. I think I was sitting in an office with the lads are training. Powered out of me tree, I couldn't stick.
Writing has been it was obviously a different time. Like, the social media didn't exist. Promoting the game was hard to do, but you played your part in that as well. You had your column. When did that start, and what role did that, I suppose, play? Because at the time you had a column, Roddy had a column, I think.
Yeah.
Pat Dolan had a column. Yeah. And you're using papers to.
It was great.
Yeah,
I mean, it was great for the league. I mean, really was, because Roddy and me again, you know, on a Friday night or whatever, yeah, Friday night then, like, mad. We were playing Roddy Bowles, and Roddy had come up in his splendor, like he dressed. Mine going out me screwy tracksuit, me old runners, like.
He's in the Louis Copeland.
He's in the Louis Copeland's coat. And the brogues, brown, bright brown, like, God, you're shining. So we're playing there in the box, and we always gave a bit of banter, like, you know, between the two of us. We'd always be at the box, but which you could do at that stage, because they wouldn't tell you to shut up, sit down and whatever. You could be standing at the one in the box, and nearly in Talca, you can nearly touch the other box.
Yeah, yeah.
But we were playing them, and I looked at the thing, and the next minute it's all mucky, like, you know. It was a bit heavy. It was grand, but our box was grand. Now, it wouldn't matter because I'm in the scruffy tracksuit and the runners.
But theirs is a mud bat.
It's a mud bat, right? The muck is up to his ankles. And he's going round, he's walking, and I'm looking at his shoes and I'm going, fucking man, look at him. The Louis Copeland is doored up to up halfway up his shins, like, you know. And I go, we go in, and I said to Ollie, what's wrong with the box with you? Ollie had hosed it. He'd hosed it all week. And then the night before, the day before the game, a couple of hours, he was in hosing it again. All he'd done was, he must have poured thousands of gallons of water in it just because Roddy was coming in and he didn't like Roddy.
Ollie's the only man to waterlog part of his own football pitch.
What?
The only man to waterlog part of his own pitch.
He's deadly. And then to see it and to look at Roddy Dad like going around trying to clump and take his feet out of the muck. And it wasn't that mucky because you're looking at him going, what's going on over there? Like,
my technical area is grand.
It's grand. And he holds it down and he never said to anybody. He just sat there. I knew it was Ollie.
I had to be.
You're going there. And if you'd have looked around the stand, you would have been like arms folded. There would have been a smile now as broad as it could be. But there now. But they were the things you love and you love about him. Like, he didn't care. He didn't like Roddy. So there, it was okay to put all that water in the dugout. He wouldn't even have an idea that might be wrong. He just done it. And he could. And if you said to him, why? Because I can. I can do that.
Like, do it anyway.
It's my ground.
Did anything for Shells. It's funny though, because like between yourself and Pat and Roddy, there's probably, fair to say, an element of panto. You're winding him up, he's winding you up.
Oh, absolutely. It definitely was. Pat Dolan the same.
Ollie fell for it though. Ollie took it all very personally.
Oh, all. Yeah, yeah. But we didn't.
Yeah.
I think Pat Dolan probably was serious about stuff. Me and, what you said exactly, it's pantomime stuff for me and Roddy. Like, it was just, it was just pantomime. It was just, you know, we knew, and he was the main character, and I'm the main character, or one of us is, like, and him doing that, like, in the end, I talked about him afterwards, he cracks up laughing about it. Like, you know, I don't think Pat Dolan would ever crack up laughing about it, like, ever. But then, again, different ways. And if we were all the same, it wouldn't have worked. But because we were three different people, what you said was great for the league. They loved it.
Did you enjoy writing the pieces?
I loved it, yeah. I loved it.
Because, you know, straight away you can get talk directly to your own opposition manager, your own players. It was the only thing like it. It was so unique. It didn't happen in England at the time.
No, but I also had the best writer in the set. Neil knew me and he'd listen. Now, like, unlike the book where Neil came in and checked all the facts and put it into English, as I would say. The book is kind of, I wrote the book and my wife typed it. And Neil made a book out of it. But that one, I just rambled on. Like, I didn't know what was coming in next because I'd just go off on it. And Neil was always able to come back and really funny, take the good bits out, put the good bits in, take the bad bits out. And it was deadly. Everybody waited for the papers, like, to read what was going on this week. And it was a great time for League of Ireland.
Talk to me about 2007. You're coaxed. You're not necessarily in retirement, but you're out of football.
Mm.
You come back to Shells, club's on its knees. Ollie, sadly, he's not in great shape.
No.
He would pass away not long after that. How does that come about? Why do you do it?
Because, you know, for all the things you say and do and all the clubs you have, you have an affection for certain, you have more of an affection for certain clubs. I keep saying, I love me time in Dundalk. I love me time in Sligo because they were rural. But Dublin is a bit different. It's very hard to get the feeling of a town with one team. But here, Ollie was different. Like, I just felt obliged that I got so much out of it that I was right to go back. That makes me sound like as if I'm like Mother Teresa. I'm not.
No, I can understand it.
I had that feeling for the club. And then I met with Joe Casey then, who was so good to me. I mean, so good. And to this day, I don't make many friends in that I would call friends, they're acquaintances. But Joe Casey, to this day, is, I would consider a friend. If I was in trouble, I could go to him. And I like, so when I came back in here with this in my mind, Joe was there. It was great. He tried and tried. I mean, I know he's not probably to the forefront now, but it wasn't Dermot Keighley saved Shelbourne. Joe Casey saved Shelbourne because he gave me the wherewithal. Okay. He always said to me, Dermot, I'll push the boat out as far as I can go for you, but it's always going to be tied to the shore. And sum them up. And maybe now today is not his time because things have progressed and you're a different club. But at that time, if there was no Joe Casey, there was no Dermot Keighley, there was no Shelbourne. And I know I owe him so much, but I think at the time, because it was a basket case, and you knew you were going to try and save a club. And I mean, it happened now, look, at the top of the league a few years later, well, now it's a lot of years, but it's, you know, it just turns around. And I would hope that for all League of Ireland clubs. I hate seeing a club in trouble. I really do. It's bad for the league.
You didn't make any promises to Joe like you did to Ollie. I'll win the league in 2 years. I'll have the club in 2 years.
No, I didn't.
You did well to get an 11 for that first game. So talk me through, how long do you get? Is it literally like 24 hours, 48 hours?
Oh, yeah, it was. No, yeah. I knew players every day. I mean, I think I took a week off. I was running around. We signed everybody in a pub. Me, the Kilmardini or the, anywhere, just meet them, sign them, tell them lies about how much money we're going to give. I'm not telling lies, that's wrong. But fight and fight and fight. Gone, I can't give you that. I'm trying to get fellas in that you knew were good pros, really good pros, but we're going to do it on the cheap for you, you know. They liked you, they owed you one or something. You call in all favours, everything was done. And then all of a sudden you come up with no team and there's your first, I think, 13 or 14 players. And that was it.
Shells fans rightly look back at that era and that team with such pride because they were the people who helped out Shells when no one else would. You know, the people who won the league the previous year, 99.9% are all gone. Staff, backroom players.
Yeah.
But the likes of yourself, the players who came in, you had no reason to be there. You didn't know anyone, anything, but you wanted to be there. I think even now, you may not realise, Dermot, how much people actually care for the 07 achievement, even compared to the double. Like, the double's an amazing, but 07 holds a really special place for Shells.
But you see, I did have a reason and a cause. No, because they were good to me the first time. So I owed them. And I wasn't, I was basically retired anyway. So what am I doing? I give them a lend of my time, of my experience and all that. But I felt I owed it. It wasn't like I'm coming, as I said, I'm not Mother Teresa. I'm not coming in on the high horse. I felt I owed a debt to this club. And I paid it. Now, if that wasn't good enough, I couldn't have. But as it happened, it was good enough. And that pleases me as much as winning the league, winning a double. Because you kept something alive that's precious. Shelbourne. My father played for Shelbourne in 1947. Like, and I won a cup. Like, it's in our blood. But I didn't know. My father never talked about football. It's only when I was writing the book I realised, Jesus, he was in there.
He kept a secret.
He kept it. Well, he didn't keep it. Like, he done what Alan accused me of doing. Just do it and play and forget about it. Don't tell anybody. Like, then it wasn't social media. It was just, he just never mentioned football in the house. I mean, he could have went to Leeds for 20,000 quid in 1947. I mean, he must have been a player, like.
Yeah, definitely.
He's a good player. So you're looking at that, and at the end of it, like, you're a professional and you're a footballer, but you have to have a heart. You have to feel something. I don't think you can just collect your wages and go out and play. Even if you're the best in the world and you give it your best shot all the time, if you really want to make a difference, you must have a feeling for the club. And I had. And when I came back, that's my little bit back. And that's all it was. Do I take it now that because Duffer's on top of the league, am I going to claim that? Not at all. That's lovely. I love seeing that. It's great. It's fantastic for me. Because you know that somewhere along the line, you helped a great club out. Lovely.
It's a great time, actually, because when you look at that time for Shells, it's probably one of the very unique times where it didn't matter what the results were every week because we were just, you know, winning to have a club.
Yeah.
Like, that was where we were at, you know.
It was fantastic. And rightly so. That was the truth. You know, there was no club. So you were, what can you do? You can't do worse than that. Go out of existence. If you finish last, and we didn't. If you finish last, that's happy. Because the club's here.
I mean, it's Shells next year. That's the main part.
Yeah, it's like being in Dundalk now. You know, what do you want? Do you want to win the league? I don't care. Do you want to get relegated? I don't care. I want the club to survive. And that was the same here. What do you want? You want Shells. You don't want that. You don't care. You just want to go to a match next week with Shells. And that's fantastic. I mean, the way it grabs people and everybody joins together. It was great. It's a great part. I know it was difficult, but it's good to be part of that. For all the, well, then, but you've won 18 gold medals and 15 silver medals and all this. But what you remember is coming back here and helping. That's my bit to League of Ireland. It's not that I won 6 or 9 or 15 medals. It doesn't make any difference. They're personal, but to come back and be able to, like, you're fortunate. That's right. I don't feel as if they owe me anything. I feel as if I was fortunate to be able to give something back to a club that had my father and me. Lovely. I couldn't wish for more. They win the league. That's grand.
That's the legacy probably then you're most proud of, being able to come into this club and with Joe keep the show on the road.
Absolutely. It was better than any, the double, whatever else. Because you owe. And you very rarely get a chance to pay something back as a footballer. We're all accused of taking and moving, which we all did. No more than me. 3 years, gone. Out the door. So that's right. But then when you get something, a great club, like this is now and was, to be able to give something back is more than money. It's just the whole, it means everything.
Dermot, I could stay here all day, but I have to let you go. I really appreciate your time. Thanks a million for coming in. The book is on sale now. It'll be on sale this Wednesday at Talcott. You'll be there. Damien Duff will be there.
Well, I tell you, I had him in school. And he done what he was told then, so yeah, but I was supposed to be there. I had one phone call with him. I said, Dame, would you like to come out for the cup or for the book, to launch a book? And he said, yes. And I said, look, hold on. Don't say yes, because I don't expect it, because you're a busy man. And he just said, 200% I'll be there. Now, he's probably only with me for 2 minutes. So you want to get there early.
Well, the teacher and the pupil reunited once again, and wouldn't it be fitting if he's the man to bring the glory back to Shells?
Absolutely. It couldn't happen to a nicer fella. Well, nicer, I don't know, but yeah, to a better fella.
Dermot, thanks so much. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you. My loved one home
show.